the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop this inhuman race.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about the folks who are killing the planet and folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses. So please go get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information you're about to get, because this isn't couch potato radio, it's activist radio, and I urge you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down at the road blockade. If you have information or announcements, comments, or whatever for Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact information later on in the show. Now let's get back into the news. Flood reports may halt a Nevada project. Groundwater flooded the proposed Yucca Mountain nuclear waste site in Nevada thousands of years ago. A Russian geologist reported this last Tuesday, raising questions about the project's safety. Designers of the long-delayed project hope to seal off the radioactive waste underground for 10,000 years or more, when it will have decayed to safer levels. But geologist Yuri Dublyansky of the Russian Academy of Sciences said the flooding problem he found may be a potential showstopper. And in other news, the Navy has halted its controversial program of killing rare foxes on San Clemente Island in California, opting instead for non-lethal tools to protect an even more endangered bird upon which the fox preys. And wilderness has been proposed for 1 million acres of western Utah. Governor Mike Leavitt and Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt proposed designated 1 million acres of Utah's western desert as wilderness. As part of the deal, Utah would trade some of its checkerboard school trust parcels in 7 counties so federal lands could be consolidated into wilderness. And New Zealand, Australia, and Brazil are pushing plans to declare half of the world off-limits to whalers to protect the tropical breeding grounds should commercial whaling resume. And the highly prized Namibian cheetah today finds itself under the threat of extinction all over the world for various reasons. This is why CITES and a number of conservation groups have joined forces to try and protect its future as an endangered species. And on June 2nd, the Southwest Center for Biological Diversity and the Southern Utah Wilderness Association filed a formal petition with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to list Holgren's milk vetch and Shivwitz milk vetch as endangered species. Both species occur near St. George, Utah, and neighboring Mojave County, Arizona. They are threatened by the rapid development around St. George, cattle grazing, and off-road vehicles. Holgren's milk vetch occurs in just 3 areas within a 7 to 10 mile radius to the south, west, and northeast of St. George. The majority of its range is within Washington County, Utah, but it also occurs in Mojave County, Arizona. There are only a total of about 5,000 individual plants remaining. Shivwitz milk vetch occurs in just 5 sites in Washington County, west and northeast of St. George, and on and near the Shivwitz Indian Reservation. There are only about 2,000 individual plants left. And a complaint leads to the listing of 3 rare California and Oregon plants. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service listed 3 California plants as endangered in response to a formal notice of intent to sue by the Southwest Center for Biological Diversity and the Center for Biological Diversity. The 3 plants are among 33 species the centers had planned to sue over to gain Endangered Species Act listing and protection. Howell's Spectacular Stella Potty, reduced to just 11 sites within 100 acres of private lands near North Powder and Haynes in eastern Oregon in Baker and Union counties, is threatened by agricultural and urban development, livestock grazing, the usual stuff, and competition from non-native plants, and also the disruption of wetland hydrologies. Relatives of Howell's spectacular Stella Potty in the mustard family are important food crops such as cabbage and broccoli, and ornamentals such as alyssum and peppergrass. It was listed as a threatened species. The Ione buckwheat and Ione manzanita were listed as endangered and threatened, respectively, under the Endangered Species Act. The two species are imperiled by mining, residential and commercial development, off-road vehicles, and fire suppression. Ione buckwheat, a small perennial herb, has been reduced to 11 locations in Amador County. Ione manzanita, a perennial low-growing shrub with olive-green leaves and berry-like fruit, has been reduced to 17 sites in Amador and Calaveras County, California. LaHaye and Gutierrez have a recent paper published on the nest sites and nesting habitat of the northern spotted owl in Northern California in Condor. And that was issue 11, page 324 through 330. And that was came out in May 1999. A newspaper article appeared in the Times Standard quoting Dr. Gutierrez, which I can post if there is interest. The conclusions are that the owl has a strong preference for very old and gnarly Douglas fir trees for nesting, with an understory of large hardwoods and relatively low land, often along or near streams. In Northern California, the northern spotted owl's primary food is the dusky-footed wood rats, which can be found in second-growth stands. Hence, the northern spotted owl is often seen in second-growth forests, but they almost never nest there, requiring old growth for nesting. In Oregon and Washington, the primary food for the northern spotted owl is flying squirrels, an old-growth species, and hence the northern spotted owl is not commonly seen in second-growth in Oregon and Washington, except when dispersing, i.e., running the gauntlets. And the Southwest Center for Biological Diversity ran a full-page ad in the New York Times May 3rd, calling on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to reintroduce wolves to New Mexico's massive Gila Aldo Leopold Wilderness Complex. The agency wants the wolves to migrate to the Gila, one of the most extensive wilderness roadless areas in the lower 48, but won't directly put them there because of opposition by the New Mexico livestock industry. The ad also denounced the livestock industry's slaughter of thousands of wolves, bears, mountain lions, jaguars, deer, antelope, and beaver. In addition to putting national pressure on Bruce Babbitt to bring wolves back to New Mexico, the ad has generated tremendous regional debate. An Associated Press story ran about the ad ran in most Arizona and New Mexico papers and was subsequently picked up by radio news stations in both areas. The Albuquerque Tribune invited the Southwest Center for Biological Diversity and the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association to debate the pros and cons of New Mexico wolf introduction in a full-page spread on May 26th. The Santa Fe New Mexican ran a story on the ad in its outdoor section. If you'd like to see a copy of the ad, check out the following website, www.southwest-center.org/swcbd/activist/wolfhaven.html. Once again, that email address, or excuse me, webpage address is www.southwest-center.org/swcbd/activist/wolfhaven.html. And Santa Fe New Mexican editorial, one-upping Representative Joe Skeen's Republican of New Mexico cynical endorsement of a bill to reintroduce wolves into New York's Catskill Mountains. The Southwest Center has also endorsed the bill, noting that New York activists want wolves back in the Adirondacks. Skeen made an announcement hoping to play up on the illusion that wolves are being forced on New Mexico by eastern urbanites. He failed to mention, however, that the majority New Mexicans, including those within the wolf release area, support the plan. The April 23rd Santa Fe New Mexican quoted the Southwest Center of Biological Diversity calling Skeen, quote, cynical and facetious, but he has accidentally stumbled into reality and will withdraw the instant he finds out this actually makes sense and is actually a viable plan the public wants to see. He's really stuck his foot in his mouth this time. And in the April 26th editorial, the Santa Fe, New Mexico doubted Skeen's sincerity, but mused that if, quote, the farmers and the resort owners of southeastern New York welcomed the timber wolf to the comparably tidy habitat of the Catskills, it would make New Mexico, Arizona ranchers on their vast and federally augmented spreads look truly mean-spirited for refusing to share the land with an original occupant. And in international news, we have a statement by the Alliance of Indigenous Peoples of the Archipelago in Indonesia. We will not exchange the state. We will not acknowledge the state if the state does not acknowledge us. We indigenous peoples are the sector of society which has suffered most from the Indonesian government's development of forestry for over 30 years through various pieces of forestry legislation based on the 1967 Basic Forestry Law. The government has unilaterally seized control of tens of millions of hectares of customary forest lands. Those are lands which have been handed down from generation to generation, owned, controlled, and managed by tens of millions of Indonesia's indigenous peoples. It changed the status of these forests from customary lands, that is, lands where people normally lived, to state forests without any discussion with or consent from the relevant indigenous communities. Although corruption, collusion, and nepotism, some of this state forest was divided up to be logged by private timber companies, converted to plantations, and industrial timber estates are cleared by mining companies. This centralized exploitative pattern of development makes indigenous people its victims. For these reasons, and in keeping with the mandate given by the Congress of Indigenous Peoples of the Archipelago in Jakarta in March of 1999, the Alliance of Indigenous Peoples considers it right and proper to observe and comment on the various public policy reforms currently in progress which affect indigenous peoples throughout the country of Indonesia. One of these is the reform of forestry legislation in the form of a government's draft of the new forestry law presented to the Indonesian Parliament on April 12th. We also have followed the process and outcomes of the Community Forest Communications Forum, which has produced an alternative draft on forest resources management. We, the AMAN organization, would like to make the following statement about these two versions of the draft legislation. We reject the government draft because it does not in any way acknowledge or give legal protection to indigenous people's rights over the forests, which are part of their customary lands. In our view, the draft has been drawn up with no consideration of the principles of justice for indigenous peoples, and reject the process of formulating and discussing the government draft, which have not been accessible or and have been completely excluded indigenous peoples who are the component of Indonesian society most directly concerned with forest issues. We conclude that President Habibie's transitional government is incapable of generating openness and participation in the reform of developmental policy. We order the Indonesian Parliament to postpone discussion of the draft forestry law until after the elections and the formation of a new government. That's a statement from some folks down in Indonesia, very worried about their forests. And the Ojek people have lived from time immemorial in the forests of the Mau Escarpment in Kenya. By tradition, these are hunter-gatherer peoples, especially famed as harvesters of honey, which they consume themselves and exchange with their neighbors. Tenet Forest is part of their territory, which they occupied until it was gazetted as a government forest by the colonial government in 1961. Since then, they have lived there as squatters subject to constant harassment. However, in 1991, the Kenyan government legally allocated 5 acres of forest per family to 5,000-plus members of the Ojek community. Confident that their rights had been recognized at last, they began farming and constructing schools while still using the forest and gathering honey. But powerful interests wish to occupy the forest, which is being used, among other things, for timber. Faced with renewed harassment and threats of eviction, the Ojek community went to law against the authorities. On May 13th, the Nakuru District Commissioner tried to preempt the case by giving the Ojek community 14 days' notice to leave the forest, threatening to use force if they resisted. The Ojek community leaders met and vowed never to leave the Tenet Forest until the government allocates them land there. They obtained an order of injunction from the Kenyan High Court to restrain the local government from evicting people until their case is heard tomorrow, June 4th. Please send faxes or write to Mr. John Latunda, District Commissioner, Nakuru District, Box 81, Nakuru, Kenya. That's N-A-K-U-R-U. Once again, that address is Mr. John Latunda, District Commissioner of the Nakuru District, P.O. Box 81, Nakuru, Kenya, N-A-K-U-R-U. Or you can write care of the Office of the Attorney General, and that fax number is 011-00254-2211-082. For those of you unfamiliar with international numbers, I'll read that one again. 011-00254-2211-082. And you can also write to the Chief Conservator of Forests at the Forest Department, P.O. Box 30513, Nairobi, Kenya. That's the Chief Conservator of Forests, Forest Department, P.O. Box 30513, Nairobi, Kenya. Let them know that the land of the traditional homeland of the Ojek is sacred. They have been the occupiers of that forest and practical conservationists with a proven track record since time immemorial. The post-colonial Kenya land was legally allocated to the Ojek community. Eviction will deprive them, of their livelihood, thus infringing on their right to live. And the Ojek are an indigenous guardians of these forests and must be respected in their capacity as well as their will to continue or restitute their traditional life if the forests of Kenya shall not further decline and many more Kenyans suffer from the loss of forests and other devastation of the natural resource base. Ah, boy, it's happening in Indonesia. It's happening in Kenya. And it's also happening in Gabon, Central Africa. On the equator, in Gabon, Central Africa, there is a primeval rainforest, the Mpasa Minguli, of unsurpassing glamour, a breathtaking amphitheater of waterfalls and cataracts on the wild Ilvindu River. Called the Ovindo Wonders by early explorers, with gorillas, chimpanzees, mandrills, and elephants patrolling the riverbanks, this paradise is now under threat by a French logging company, which, after making a written agreement with the European Union and the IUCN, the World Conservation Union, to save this wild paradise, has instead started heavy industrial logging right in the core area. You can read a recent CNN report about this at the following webpage, cnn.com/earth/9704/08/ecowarrior/index.html. That webpage again, cnn.com/earth/9704/08/eco.warrior/index.html. The governments of Gabon, France, and Italy all support the written agreement that was made by the logger Roger. In spite of this, the ruthless Roger logging company has gone right ahead to plunder this jewel of nature as fast as they can, endangering the local population and making it doubtful that the forest animals can survive. Roger is cutting down the biggest trees, thereby destroying the ecological balance of this pristine forest. It will never be as it was before. They are erasing forever its prehistoric charm. Furthermore, their bulldozed logging roads crisscross the forest, and poachers are using these roads to kill elephants, gorillas, and chimpanzees for the meat, which is a delicacy in the nearby villages. And this meat is spreading terrible new epidemics, AIDS and the Ebola disease. These epidemics, if not controlled, threaten the entire planet, as the movie and the book The Hot Zone have illustrated. The giant imposing trees hundreds of years old, which are the glories of this million-year-old rainforest, have been defending humanity from Ebola and possibly other more terrible diseases. But now, sadly, these giants are being increasingly destroyed, their habitat plundered by saws and bulldozers of the Roger Group. Scientists have demonstrated that there is a close relationship between industrial logging and outbreaks of Ebola. All this havoc is being wreaked in order to provide parquet floors and tropical wood furniture for some of the most privileged people of the world. The Roger logging and consequent poaching by professional poachers is also threatening the traditional and inoffensive hunting ways of the pygmy and other local tribes, whose small game is disappearing. So these local people are unable to find their traditional prey and are therefore in danger of death from hunger as well as disease. We need everybody involved to get involved, to address letters, email, and action to the protagonists in this drama. What can you do? please write to the president of Group Roger, or Roger, and let him know how you feel about Gabon's forests. You can email these letters to info@roger, that's R-O-U-G-I-E-R, .fr. That's info@roger, R-O-U-G-I-E-R, .fr. And the gentleman's name is Jacques Roger of the Roger Group, Paris, France. And again, the email address is info@roger.fr. Well, at this time, we're going to put on some commentary here on Earth First Radio. We recently received a cassette of commentary from a Earth First Radio Network commentator back east named Oak. So let's move right on into this commentary.
Out here in the Five College area of Western Massachusetts, we have 10,000 thoughtless Joeys, all of whom seem to drive late model Jeeps poorly and wear baseball caps. And then we have, or I should say had, Michael Perlman. He was a writer-philosopher who apparently took his own life on Earth Day of 98. He spoke and wrote passionately on the state of the planet, albeit often in a philosopher's arcane sort of way. A local news and arts rag ran a lead on the story at the time, to the effect that Perlman cared too much, implying, I suppose, if we care less about the condition of the Earth, we will continue to live and enjoy its benefits. Those Joeys certainly seem to. Just days before Michael Perlman left this world, he gave me a copy of his most recent book, Hiroshima Forever, The Ecology of Mourning. The somewhat ironic title, given the circumstances, was made all the more unsettling by the inscription he made for me inside. It said, To Oak, for Earth. For Earth was the title of a poem he wrote sometime back, contemplating the act of suicide as an answer or address to the terrible ills visited upon the planet by the human race. Heady stuff, heartfelt stuff. Michael, I am told, was very dismayed of late about what he termed climatic mayhem. More recently in a conversation, he used the phrase climatic disruption. It's what we euphemistically call global warming, the chaotic effect of our lifestyle on the weather. Most of science has confirmed this. Only Rush Limbaugh and various other Joeys deny it or simply don't care. I am left to wonder, as I'm sure many others are, if I had had the opportunity to talk with Michael Perlman about concepts of hope and struggle before he made what seems to be his final statement. Perhaps he might have stuck around a little longer to continue fighting the good fight. On the last occasion we were together, we shared the platform with other activists at a symposium on ecological action. I spoke about how being part of the struggle to save the Earth was a source of sustenance for myself and many of the people I work with. I wish you could have identified with that kind of hope, that determination to keep at it, which drives so many of us against what seems like impossible odds. But what other options have we? Well, there's always death, I suppose, or the near death of 10,000 Joeys. I'll take the struggle any day.
And that's it for the commentary from Oak tonight. To get news, announcements, or comments from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send your email to cruzief@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or you can send letters, donations, CDs, or cassettes to Earth First Radio at P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. For more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, subscribe to the Earth First Journal. They're at P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Earth First Radio is broadcast live on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, every Thursday evening at 8 p.m., or you can listen to Earth First Radio anytime on your computer on the World Wide Web. And that web address is http://radioforall.web.net. That's radioforall.web.net. The 4 is the number 4. And you'll need a sound card, but the software you need is free on the website. Earth First Radio is being rebroadcast on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. If you found us on the web, why don't you ask your local station to download and rebroadcast Earth First Radio? Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. Earth First Radio is affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. I'm Uncle Dennis. Thank you very much for listening, and please tune in again. And now we're going to move to a song, and this is off of, what did I put on here? I put on Earth First Made, Daryl Cherney, off of his CD, Timber.
There once was an Earth First Maid who never was afraid of the chainsaw boys with their phallic toys and their bulldozers that cut the grain. The one thing that she liked was a tree that had been spiked. And when the security goons came round, she never could be found. No, you can't scare me. I'm working for the forest. I'm working for the forest. I'm working for the forest. No, you can't scare me. I'm working for the forest. I'm working for the forest. Till the day I die. Her heart would really ache when they'd plant a survey stake. So when night would fall, she'd pull them all and chuck them in the middle of a lake. Her battery-powered drill made a sound so sweet and shrill. And as their radiators squeaked, their engines would be tweaked. No, you can't scare me. I'm working for the forest. I'm working for the forest. I'm working for the forest. No, you can't scare me. I'm working for the forest. I'm working for the forest. She could trust to turn a logging truck to rust was a can of Coke right down the choke. One turn of the key and watch it bust. To defend her mother dear from the rapist profiteers. But to give up now would be the worst when you know the earth.